Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, Bonjour. In Spain, Hola. In Italy, Ciao. In Egypt, Ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, Akwaaba. In Nigeria, Peleo. In South Africa, Sawubona. In Senegal, Nangadef. In Kenya, Jambo. In Israel, Shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, Assalamu alaikum. Greetings, and may peace be upon you all.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, grand rising. This is Jana with the Success Strategy Show. I'm here the first Saturday of every month. So today's the 3rd of September. Everyone's back from their summer halls or their summer vacation or wherever you've been. Maybe you've been home this whole time like I have, just enjoying the weather. We had beautiful, beautiful hot summer this year in Britain, and particularly in London. It was over 100 at some point, over 100 Fahrenheit. And lots of people were complaining about how hot it is. The thing with Britain and with London is that it's very, very damp. It's very, very humid. So people complain when it gets to be about 80, people are saying, you can fry an egg on the pavement. And when it gets to be about 80, people are saying, it's a scorcher. And you turn on the TV or you look at the newspaper and it says, it's a scorcher because it's 80. So I find that kind of ridiculous because to me 80 is not a scorcher. But nevertheless, it was hot. It was extremely hot. And it was really sunny. And it was even hot and sunny on the bank holiday. It wasn't so hot by then, but it was still sunny. Normally, traditionally, it always pours with rain on bank holidays. But the bank holiday even had some warm, sunny weather, so that was lovely. That was lovely. So I hope you've been enjoying it. I hope it hasn't been too hot for you if you're in Britain. We've been discovering all kinds of new, weird, and wonderful ways to stay cool during the hot weather. But we're back now. It's September, and right now, it's starting to get cloudy. The children are back at school. The parents are back at work, and life is kind of returning to normal, slowly but surely. It's been a weird couple of years, as you know. We've had the pandemic, and now we're facing a global economic crisis, which is a lot of which is to do with the war in Ukraine. And it's just really, really stressing people because the price of oil and gas is about to skyrocket. And the price of oil and gas affects everything. It affects food prices. It just affects everything. And, you know, the government's saying it's going to be 10% inflation, maybe even higher than that. But I know, you know, last year I could buy a packet of crackers, and they were 80 pence. And then a couple months ago, they went up to a pound. And then now, they're £1.90. So that's not 10%, is it? That's 90% and more. That's actually double what it was costing a year ago or so. And, you know, this is my opinion. My opinion is the government has been lying about the state of the economy for years. You know, someone said to me a couple of years ago, the reason why house prices are remaining so high and the government is not doing anything about it, even though we have this massive homelessness crisis, is everything to do with the fact that they can lie and say that the economy is healthy because of house prices, property prices. Well, they can't do that anymore. You know, so it's becoming very, very obvious and very, very evident now that we're in big trouble. So I'd like to know your thoughts about this. This is Jana with the Success Strategy Show. I'm not sure where Naima is right now. She's my producer, but I'm sure she'll be here soon. Yeah, so my guest today is a lady called Jen. And she is from the Black Culture Market, which is a new project, I believe, in Brixton in South London. So this is the Success Strategy Show with me, Jana, on the Female Solution Worldwide Radio and TV Network. And I'm the author of Success Strategies for Black People, and I host the annual Blogging Carnival for Nonviolence. And I'm your host on the first Saturday of every month. Here on the Success Strategy Show, every month, we seek to help you and support you to find solutions to your problems, to find solutions to life. Because we all have problems, we all have challenges, we all have things that are going on, but we can focus on the problems and the challenges, and we can focus on the solutions. So here on Success Strategies, we focus on the solutions. Yeah, I don't know what's happening with my internet right now. Speaking of problems and challenges, we always seem to have some kind of technical difficulties, but we're connected now. So hopefully that's going okay. So today my guest is Jen from Black Culture Market in Brixton, South London, celebrating the vibrancy of African Caribbean culture and Black history. To speak with my guest, and if you have any questions for my guest, please phone in on 515-605-9325. Then you'll be in my queue, the host queue. If you press 1 after that, you will be in my queue. And you can speak to me, you can speak to my guest. If you're outside the United States, you need to put a 1 in front of that. So it's 001-515-605-9325. And then press 1 to be in the host queue. You can also join us on Facebook at The Female Solution and on YouTube at The Female Solution. So Jen, I believe, is coming along later. She'll be here in a little bit to talk about the Black Culture Market. The next...
Jonathan, can you hear me now?
Market will be the 1st and 2nd of October, so in just over a month's time. And it will
Jonathan,
be,
can you hear me now?
Hello? Hi, are you there?
Yeah. Oh, you can hear me now? Okay.
I can hear you. Hi, Naima. How you doing?
Good. I'm wonderful. And I apologize for any technical difficulties. I actually was attending a funeral this morning. She's kind of an international person. Sister Ava Muhammad, who's been the national spokesperson for the Nation of Islam under Minister Louis Farrakhan. She passed away, and her funeral services were this morning. So I was trying to sort of get that in before the show, so I'm just leaving the mosque now. It's not quite over, but of course I knew I had to be here to work with this board and things. But, it's been quite a program. She's been a profound human being, a woman of great stature. And so, you know, this is like the second major community funeral I've been to in the last couple of days. Yesterday was Prince Asiel Ben Israel, who is known worldwide as ambassador for the Hebrew Israelite community under Ben Ami. And so that was another big event. And so what tends to happen, you know, when these major figures pass away, their funerals are like big community gatherings. And so, you know, I'm one of those people that enjoy going to funerals. I don't know if that sounds morbid, but, you know,
see people you may not have seen for a while, and you're sharing your connection with the person who just passed away.
Yes. So, you know, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it really helps you reflect on whatever you are doing that will be of impact and benefit to the community. Because, you know, when you see someone who has had such an impact with their lives, you know, and you realize it's important to do something while you're here, it makes a difference.
Yeah,
so,
that's
yeah, right.
Because we're not here for very long, you know. We always think we have more time than we actually do.
Yes.
You know,
so we need
to get on with
it,
really.
Over before you know it. Yes.
Yeah.
By the 12:30 break, I should be live on Facebook. I should be back at my location.
Great. That's great. Okay. So I got a message from Jen, who's going to be my my guest. She's going to join us a little later. She's from the Black Culture Market in Brixton in South London. And she's saying that she's going to be on StreamYard, but she's only going to be on audio, not on video.
Okay.
So
now you sent me a link.
Now, there's been quite a few black businesses in London and in Britain that have had their premises and their venues taken away from them over the past couple of years.
No.
This is before, I'm talking pre-pandemic. And it's sort of like an epidemic, really, that all these different black businesses that were doing positive things, all of a sudden they got their venues and it's just going out of my head. But, you know, where they meet, where they hold their events, the places, their premises, that's it. They've had their premises and their venues taken away from them. So this is one of the things I want to talk to Jen about today when she comes on. Because she's, I'm not sure if she is aware of it, but there's been quite a bit of that happening pre-pandemic, that people were putting on events. There was a black market up in the East End at Petticoat Lane, and I think they were on every month, and then it got shut down, and this is kind of weird. And, so that's one of the things I'm hoping to talk about. If you've got questions for my guest today, Jen, please phone us on 515-605-9325. And if you have any thoughts about this, about, you know, black markets, why we need a black culture market, and if you've got any thoughts about the fact that, you know, quite a few of these black businesses have had their premises and their venues taken away from them. If you've got any thoughts about that at all, please phone in and have your say. Or join us on Facebook at The Female Solution and on YouTube at The Female Solution. So you just heard Naima say that in a little while she's going to be on Facebook. Hi, you still there?
Yes, yes, I'm still here, and I should be joining you live on Facebook. You know, also this weekend is the, I believe, the African Festival that is held at the DuSable Museum of African American History every summer.
I didn't know that.
And yes, and one of the things that we get a chance to see is a variety of Black-owned businesses, culture. Mm. You know, they have performances, and, you know, they've had various authors. I've been a featured author there a few years back. You know, we were actually able to tape some of our TV shows there during the event. And they have several festivals of the year. I think they have Ghana Fest, you know.
They do stuff around Kwanzaa as well. Because sometimes I do a mix of all the Kwanzas all over the world. Kwanzaa is not just an African American thing. We have Kwanzaa celebrations every year in different parts of Britain. And there's been a Kwanzaa celebration in Paris that I'm aware of. There's been one in Tokyo that I'm aware of. And actually, they have them every year in Zimbabwe, or is it the South Africa?
Wow.
I think it might be Soweto, but anyway, every year in Southern Africa, they have a Kwanzaa celebration. That's been going on for many, many years.
Yes, a lot of people don't know that. It's just an African American thing.
That way, but it's a universal thing, because from what I'm told, Dr. Moringa.
Thank you,
Dr. Karinga.
Traveled
all over different parts of Africa, and he found that some cultural practices were observed in all different countries all over Africa, and that's how he formulated the elements of Kwanzaa, the things that we all share in common as African people.
And I think that's a very significant thing. I remember he came to our university. I attended the University of Nebraska, and he came there to talk about this, the whole Pan-African philosophy, and the fact that we still share that common ancestry. And even though we may have been away for the past 100 years, there are some common roots. And now a lot of people are doing the DNA test, you know, the 23andMe and all of that. And so they're discovering exactly where on the continent their ancestors have been. So I think that helps to give you a sense of identity. If you may have felt like, you know, you don't really know anything other than, well, I'm Black, but, you know, what does that really mean? What are my genetic roots, you know, all of that. So it's helpful. But, you know, on the subject of
it's so important.
Economy.
But the thing is, I claim the whole of the continent as my my motherland, because I don't know. I mean, you know, my sister got some DNA tests done, so we have a little bit of an idea now of where we originated from. But people were traded from all over the continent, right? Zanzibar was a trading port. People were traded there from all over the continent. So we can't really say, oh, my ancestors came from one place or they came from two places. It's much more complicated than that.
Yes, it is. And, you know, one thing I think about that Africa is still kind of struggling with is that division, you know, the divisiveness that comes with claiming an ethnic heritage and kind of in different. And one of the benefits of being African American and claiming the whole continent is that we're not having the attitude over these people, they've been our enemies for centuries, or these people we don't marry into them. You know, we don't know any of that, so we can't do any of that. And that's I think beneficial when I see some of the same attitudes going on in present day Africa, and people aren't able to get together economically because of old family divisions, then we end up with the same problem that got us into slavery, which was infighting and competition.
Yeah, people fighting and selling each other and fighting over territory and all the rest of it. But, I mean, unfortunately, we also have that tribalistic attitude to a certain extent in the United States. You know, African Americans don't want to talk to people from the Caribbean people don't want to talk to people from the United States, people from the Caribbean don't want to talk to people from Africa. People from Africa don't want to talk to them. You see, so we still somehow have this tribalistic attitude, and we've got to stop doing that.
Yeah. I know. We didn't learn anything.
Yeah, we still have stuff to learn. There's always stuff to learn. I mean, this is so destructive, what we're doing. It's so destructive, this us and themism. And it's got to stop.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I mean, when you come up against white supremacists, when you come up against the police or different forces of white supremacy, they don't care which background you came from. They don't care.
They don't care what island you came from.
They don't care what country you came from. All they know is that you are black, right? That's all they care about. So we need to have some unity. We need to have some unity in the community.
Yeah.
So I'm really interested in talking to Jen today. I'm not entirely sure when she's going to join us, but I know she's going to be joining us soon
we'll
to talk about the Black Culture Market. Now, I just recently found out about the Black Culture Market down in Brixton in South London, which is actually not very far from where I live, and I'm very excited to find out about this. Because as I was saying earlier, there's quite a few black businesses that were holding very positive events. There was black history studies that were holding a black market once or twice a year, and they suddenly had their venue just taken away from them. Venue they had used before with no problem. All of a sudden, they had it taken away from them. And that's happened to quite a few different black-owned businesses and black-owned projects that I'm aware of.
Yes.
Here in London and also in other parts of the country.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, these things like this, I don't think it's accidental. I don't think it's by chance.
Mm.
When people see that you are an economic competitor, they make it difficult for you to compete.
Yeah.
And a lot of things happen under the table that we're not aware of. We're not aware of the different alliances that exist that conspire.
Yeah, I agree.
Shut us out.
But you see, the reason why a lot of Asian businesses are thriving, there's many reasons for this, but one of the reasons is even though they're competitors in the marketplace, they work together. Right? If you've got half a dozen Asian little supermarkets selling spices or selling plantain or yam or sweet potatoes or selling hair products, you know, they get together and they buy in bulk and it's cheaper for them, so they can therefore sell it to us. They're selling us our own stuff, but they can sell it cheaper than we can because of what we were just talking about, which is the division, the divisiveness among black people and black-owned businesses. You know, the Asians have learned it doesn't matter how fierce the competition is. In some ways, we all work together. And this is something that we as black business owners need to learn. If you've got any thoughts about that.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, several years ago, my business partner and I, we were doing a project for the Ethiopian restaurant. There's like 10 of them in the Chicagoland area. Nice restaurants knew they were in competition, but they would meet every week, and they would talk about, okay, who's having a special event? All right, we're going to all support that. We're going to all, you know, buy tickets to their, you know, whatever event having. And then they would all get together and buy in bulk. There was one store that everyone bought from, Ethiopian owned, so they all patronized that store. They bought in bulk, so they were able to get things cheaper. You know, they buy supplies in bulk. You know, basic things that you need, like, you know, paper products.
They can buy in bulk, and therefore they can sell it more cheaply. And then they can undercut us. They can undercut our businesses because they're working together.
Right. So now I was trying to, matter of fact, I'm still working with, they've got a Black Farmers Association here in Pembroke, Illinois, which is like far south in the countryside. But what they wanted to try to do is set up something with a black restaurant. Their produce in bulk. And, you know, people say things philosophically, but then when it comes to money where your mouth is, I'm not translated into actually doing it. So I'm still working with that. And,
Did you know there's a black farmer in Britain?
Yeah.
Did you know that? There's a guy who has a brand, and his brand is the Black Farmer.
Wow.
Right, if you go
wow.
into some of the big supermarkets, you can see some of his stuff. The Black Farmer is his brand. You know, and he talks about, well, why don't we want to go and live in the countryside and grow vegetables? Well, I'll tell you something very clearly. I am very clear about why I'm not moving into the countryside, right? Apart from the fact that I'm not a farmer, I'm not living in the countryside, not in Britain.
Yeah.
You know, but he's happy and he's doing well. He's doing well. His business is doing well. Everybody's heard of him, the Black Farmer.
Yeah. Farming is not an easy thing because you are definitely subjected to the elements and then farming is a highly industrialized thing. It's not like you put like a mule in a plow like in the old days. You know, you really do, if you're going to do it on a serious scale, you need to be able to have credit at the places that it should seed or whatever, because it's going to take you a while before you see a profit. And if they don't depend on it, which is one of the last one I've been having, again, a way that they can cut into the market. If you can't get credit as a white farmer, you can't plant because you can't get the supplies that you need up front.
That's right.
So they struggle with that. And then, you know, unity issue. If you know you've got a small plot of land and you're going to have a small, then it just makes for, if you want to grow a crop, you put the crop together and then sell it at a cheaper price because it's not costing you as much. But, you know, we've dealt with some issues even among the Black farmers where there's still that little bit of, you know, suspicion of each other, not quite able to work on it. You know, can't agree. I mean, we've been working with them and them to even put together a solar energy system because a lot of them want to be able to grow food in the winter months, which means you have to have hot houses. And if you can get the solar power, that's going to cost you less electricity. But, you know, again, you got to have a lot of meetings about it. But people still hesitate to move forward. And I know it's a little bit is. The hesitation, the fear of, well, I'm not sure if I know enough. I you know, will people rip me off? So we got that suspicion factor that keeps us from organizing.
If you don't know much about farming, like me, I know nothing about farming. So it's kind of understandable, really.
Yeah, I mean, I knew nothing either. When we started this program, Pandemic Farms, which stands for Producing Agricultural Nourishment, Developing Economies, Making Independent Communities. And we started clearing land and, you know, learning about the kind of plants that were growing there, the impact they were having on the soil. I mean, I grew up in the city. I knew absolutely nothing. I was on the internet every day because I didn't know a thing. I had to look up stuff.
Right.
But then you learn, you know. And then also you learn some of the newer techniques, especially about organic farming and how to do things without killing the soil, without pesticides. What are some of the natural ways of repelling unwanted insects from your crop?
Right.
And
right.
What crops grow together. So I did a lot of studying for me to know absolutely nothing.
There's a lot of black activists who've been saying for decades now, we need to be growing our own food.
Yes.
And when
you
look at all the stuff that's in the food that we're buying, it's been denatured. The soil has been denatured. When you look at some of the ingredients, you have no idea what they are.
Yes. Have no idea.
You know, these are putting into our bodies every day.
Yes. And then we find out later that certain things we've been eating causes cancer.
This is what
I'm
saying.
After several people die from cancer. So
I'm a cancer survivor.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yes.
I'm a cancer survivor, and in Britain, one out of every two people is going to have cancer in their lifetime, right? And when I had cancer, it was 7 years ago, and in those days, it was one out of three. Now it's one out of two. One out of every two people are going to have cancer in their lifetimes. And, you know, when you look at what's happening with the soil that's been denatured, what's being done to our food, what's being done to the water, and so on and so forth, it's not surprising, is it? I mean, it's shocking, but it's not surprising, if you see what I mean.
Yes, absolutely. And the thing that makes it so sad is that people, once you tell them certain things that are harmful, and, you know, you say, you cut this out of your diet, you cut that out of your diet, And it's like people are like, yeah, but I like the taste of it. Well, I like my so-and-so. And won't stop eating something that you told them will kill them. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah,
so,
but,
you know,
I guess, this is one of the ways that we self-medicate. People who are depressed or who are stressed or have some kind of mental health issues, this is one of the ways that we self-medicate, is with food. And sometimes I certainly find with the most effective foods in terms of self-medicating, just trying to make myself feel a bit better, are the worst foods, right? They're the ones that are the high in fat and high in sugar foods. You know, and apparently from what I've read, mother's milk is high in fat and high in sugar. So it's like from the time we're born, really, we are conditioned to like and enjoy high fat, high sugar foods.
Yes, and sugar is highly addictive. Which
it is. It's highly addictive and it's highly toxic.
Yes,
but,
and that's
why they put it in
everything.
Yeah, everything.
You think
absolutely.
Would have sugar in it.
Absolutely. I was looking at a can of tomato soup a couple of years ago, and it had sugar at it. And this is a big name brand soup. Everybody's heard of this brand, right? But it had sugar in the tomato soup, and I'm looking at it and thinking, why would you put sugar in tomato soup? Why would you do that?
Right.
And then people say, well, make your own. I'm thinking, right, do you really think I have the time and the energy to make my own tomato soup? I can just open a can. I'm sorry, but life is tough sometimes, you know? Some of us are having tough lives.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, and just because our time, our lifestyle is so rushed, people don't have time to do a lot of things from scratch. So they do depend on prepared foods.
Yeah.
And the unfortunate thing is you after you see how much you're eating in terms of preservatives.
Yeah.
And you know how much sugar there is in everything.
Mm.
And you want to be able to make your own meals and do things from scratch and get a blender and make smoothies and all that. And some people can. I mean, I've had periods of my life where I could do that. And then I've had periods where it's just impossible. And, you know, I'm going to McDonald's every day and going through the drive-thru and eating fries on the way home and the work and everything, like everybody else, you know, rushing through meals.
And we're under so much time pressure. And the thing is, like, for generations, our women have been looking after other people. And our women have been looking after other people's children, right? When during slavery, they were looking after the white children. After slavery ended, they were still continuing to look after the white children. My mom was a social worker for many years. She was still looking after white people's children. Who was looking after her children?
Right.
And, you know, I remember seeing this film years ago under apartheid. The film had been made secretly in South Africa under apartheid. And it was the same thing. The black women are going every day to the white women's house to look after the white children. And their children are left in the township to fend for themselves. You know, and it's getting more difficult now because the grandparents who used to look after the children, now the grandparents are still working. So who's looking after the children?
Right. That's exactly what the situation is now, because people are working and they're kind of dependent on the schools to provide meals. And they're dependent on the school to provide after school snacks and everything else. So they might get a meal when they come home, but 9 times out of 10, you know, the mother's rushing home and she's grabbing fast food. So that's
You know, and she wants to prepare meals that are healthy for her family and healthy for herself, but who has time?
Yeah.
Who has time?
Who has time, even if you have the knowledge? And unfortunately, a lot of us don't have
the knowledge. That's it.
We didn't grow up with mothers who knew, you know? That's right. Nutrition. It's almost a new concept for a lot of people. We didn't grow up with the kind of understanding of balanced meals in this past generation where everybody was working and nobody had time for
Yeah, because, I mean, my mom was one of the many, many women who would come home at the end of a full day of work and come home to her second job, you know, cooking, cleaning, looking after us.
Yes.
You know, and my dad did do some housework, but he didn't do loads. It was mostly my mom's responsibility. She just got on with it. This is in the days before microwaves, you know, before these yuppie meals started appearing. My mom sometimes would make, and she could be very ingenious sometimes. She would make TV dinners. I don't know if you remember the old TV dinners, but she'd make them herself. So, like, when we had the turkey at Thanksgiving, she'd slice up the turkey afterwards and make some of it into TV dinners with mashed potato, maybe a bit of mac and cheese and some gravy, and wrap them in the freezer so we could have them for another day. Now, you could go out and buy TV dinners, but my mom used to make her own. You know, if we had a big enough freezer, we could do that.
Yeah. And my parents, they tried to work out a system where, you know, because my father worked nights and my mother worked days, so
right.
she'd get up and cook breakfast, and then he'd drop her off at work, and then he was going to start lunch. And, you know, then we came home from school with 2 hours before she got there, and then when she got home, she fixed dinner.
Yeah.
So they kind of did a tag team thing, which I thought was good. It didn't put any stress on too many of them, but you know, nobody had time to really clean the house. So I guess that sort of fell on the children to do, which we end up being responsible for that. Which,
mm-hmm.
you know, it was a good thing because you do have to sort of, really when both your parents work, the children have to pitch in and help. Otherwise, things just don't get done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think it's hard for families today when a lot of single parent families, you can't do this thing by yourself and get it done. I mean, it's just impossible.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
they end up feeling guilty. They end up feeling like they failed because they can't do it all. You know, they can't work the two jobs and keep the house
yeah.
spotless and make sure the children
yeah.
have all the homework done and, you know, get everybody to all their different events at school. I mean, it's impossible to do all of it,
yeah.
and yet we're expected to do all of it. And
I know, we're expected to do all of it. And I heard this, someone say on TV yesterday or the day before that this study has been done in Britain, and it shows that there's a lot more single-parent families now than there used to be. And I'm thinking, what, you actually, somebody paid you to come up with that? Right? Someone paid you to come up with that? There's a lot more single-parent families now than there used to be, right? Just ask me, okay? Say, Jana, are there a lot more single-parent families now than there used to be, right? Just ask me. I will give you the same answer. Somebody actually sat down and studied this. I couldn't believe it. But this is what they do sometimes, this stupidness.
Yeah, they will pay themselves to study us and give us the answers of something we already knew existed.
Thank you. Thank you. Everybody knows. Everybody knows this. It's not news. It's not news. But, I mean, having said that, my grandmother was a single parent. My grandmother raised up my mom and my auntie as a single parent, and that was in the 1920s and 30s. So you can imagine what that was like, right?
Oh, yes. You know, and actually, with so many people that have had that experience, you know, coming from the South here in America, there's just a whole culture that we have experienced with families falling apart and not having, you know, the auntie that you can call to come and look over the children. So now you got
you don't have that extended family anymore. And you know, I'm from the States, right? So when I'm talking about my experience and my family's experience, I'm talking about the States. But from what I gather, in the Caribbean, the extended family was still very, very strong. But we come to this country, and it's not like that here.
Right. It is gone.
You know, so a lot of women, when they first came to Britain, they had children. They left their children at home with their mother or with their auntie or someone. And then when they were ready, they could bring their children across.
Right.
But nowadays, living in Britain, and certainly in urban areas, which is where most black people live, there isn't that extended family. People don't have, you know, their relatives, their aunties or their moms or their sisters or somebody to count on, to rely on, and they're just expected to do everything by themselves.
Right. It makes a big difference. So, well, I am back at my desk, and I'm going to take a break.
Right. Well done. Well done.
We've got your guest on. She's come on on StreamYard, so we're going to bring her on, and we'll be right back after this quick break. So we want you all to stick and stay. Don't stray away. We'll be right back after these messages, and so we want you to stay with us. You're listening to Success Strategies with Jhana. The Female Solution Global Radio System invites you to an invigorating conversation with our team of hosts Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Time. Start your week with Monday Morning Mindfulness with Zelda Z. Tuesdays, Self-Care with Jody Toussaint. Wednesdays, Repairing Broken Families with Naima Latif and co-host Kareem Hamid. Thursdays, Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. And Fridays, Health and Wellbeing with Siata. Saturdays, tune in 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Time. First Saturday, Success Strategies with Donna. Second Saturday, Wendy Williams Esquire on Relationships. Third Saturday, Move Around with Deborah. And fourth Saturday, Wisdom with Mama D. Join us Sundays, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time for Soul Purpose Healing with Beata. Call in and comment 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to the host and be a part of the solution.
Hi, I'm Barbara.
I'm Cheryl.
And I'm Naima. We're three black moms. And in case you didn't notice the resemblance, we're also three sisters.
We're going to be coming to you every week, sharing our successes and our mistakes as we navigate our lives as moms, wives, sisters, daughters, and of course, black women in today's world.
We'll talk about this all: race, politics, religion, economics, culture, and we'll take a look at everything from whether or not to use corporal punishment to how to teach your children about sex.
Look for our upcoming book, Growing Up Tall. It's a personal story about the lives growing up in Maple Park on Chicago's South Side. I'm Barbara.
I'm Cheryl.
And I'm Naima. We're three black moms.
Follow us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Three Black Moms.
Taxes are higher than ever. Every day, thousands of our residents leave Chicago to shop in Indiana. Jobs are being lost, and businesses are relocating. Let's find a way to lower our taxes to encourage residents to continue living and shopping in our city. Let's rebuild. Let's restore Chicago. Vote for me, for mayor of the city of Chicago, and I will work hard to find solutions that matter. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for Mayor.
Have you ever dreamed of going to exotic places, meeting fascinating people, enjoying uplifting music, and spending nights in a luxurious hotel? Do you look forward to a relaxing vacation where you can walk along the beach or sit in a quiet park and enjoy the sunset or sunrise? Whether you're flying around the world or driving across the country, we will share travel tips that will help you stay safe while you enjoy the journey. Join me every third Saturday of the month, 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, and Move Around with Deborah here on the Female Solutions Show. Call in and comment 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak.
we're back.
All right. Welcome back, Jen. Are you on the line?
So let me see if I can bring Jenna up, and we have her here.
Yep, I'm here.
Hi, Jen. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. I've got lots of questions for you about the black culture market. You ready? Can you tell us a bit about the black culture market, please, and how and when did you start it and why?
Yeah, so I started the black culture market 4 years ago, 2018, in Brixton in London.
Wow.
I started as a one-off event for Black History Month, which is in October in the UK.
Yeah.
Just Brixton is known as like the heart of the African and Caribbean community in London. So I wanted to do something to celebrate, and I've always been in entrepreneurship. So I decided to do a market specifically to cater to Black entrepreneurs and giving the public access to products that represent their heritage and culture.
Excellent, excellent. I've never heard of it until now, and I'm only down the road. I'm not far from Brixton, actually. But I'm very, very glad that you're doing that. So it's been going for 4 years.
4 years.
And how many exhibitors do you have?
It's grown. So at the moment, the space I have, I can fit about 50 exhibitors. I'm always oversubscribed. I get about 500 applications. So
Good. That sounds good. And how many shoppers do you get on average?
Oh, thousands. It's in the thousands.
That's wonderful.
And I, in order to give people access, I change the traders from the Saturday to the Sunday. So a lot of the public return and come both days. But yeah, I have thousands.
Okay. I just want to remind everybody, if you're going to speak to my guest, Jen, from the Black Culture Market in Brixton, please phone in on 515-605-9325 and then press 1 to speak to me and my guest. And if you're outside of the United States, you have to put 001 in front of that. So it's 001-515-605-9325. I'm speaking to Jen from the Black Culture Market in Brixton, South London. So tell me something, Jen. Why do you think that we need a Black Culture Market?
Many reasons. I think, one, to celebrate our heritage and culture. I think that Black culture, African Caribbean culture, is very popular in the mainstream, and I feel that it is not always owned by us, and I think it's important that we do. There's a lot of people who want to start businesses and don't have maybe the access into retail, don't know how to navigate those fields. I have been in a luxury retail for a number of years, so I have the kind of skills to share with the traders. I invite buyers so that we can get them stocked in stores. But also, like I say, it, for me, success is when I have a family come and they can buy a black doll for their kids or puzzles or cards to present them, it's really important that we have access to these products. And in the UK, not necessarily always accessible in mainstream stores. So there's a need, which I feel like the black culture market fulfills.
I think it's excellent. I really do. I think it's very positive that you're doing this, Jen. So tell me something. Are you aware of the fact that there's been quite a few black businesses which have lost their venues or their premises? I'm talking pre-pandemic.
Yeah, I'm aware of a few, yeah.
Well, like, for example, there was the Black Market, which was held by Black History Studies, and they did that a couple times a year, once or twice a year. And the last time they were doing it, that I'm aware of, they had rented this venue, which they used before. They, you know, they hired these premises, which they used before. And on the Friday night, the market was either on a Saturday or a Sunday, and on the Friday night they got an email saying you can't use the venue. And it was just like that, just out of the blue, it seemed. Are you aware of that?
I'm not aware of that, no.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's just what, I mean, I've heard about quite a few of them. There was the Nub, which was in Walthamstow, and they actually owned their premises. They actually owned the house, and they were doing things like doing film screenings. I went to quite a few of their film screenings, and they had workshops sometimes. They had talks, and apparently the neighbors were saying something like they were making too much noise, which categorically was not true, as far as I'm concerned, because I went there to quite a few of their film screenings. And, yeah, they got closed down as a venue. There's been a few of them around London, and I've heard of one in Birmingham as well that got closed down.
Okay.
So what is going to stop that from happening to the black culture market?
Oh, wow. I guess first and foremost, it's about having contracts. There's no way a venue could just send me an email the night before and say, you can't do this.
Black History Studies had a contract. They had a contract, but the venue decided to break the contract.
Well, that if it was enforceable, you wouldn't be so brazen enough to send someone an email. Like, I've managed to
make... Because they had people come in to exhibit from Europe, people holding stalls, people giving talks, giving workshops, people come from Europe, you know, had paid them, and at the last minute they were told, no, you can't use the venue.
I guess as well, me not knowing all the details, there's always, I guess, two sides as well. So not knowing all the details, but I guess from my side, obviously there's always risk, but it's, for me, it's about having contracts. It's also about building relationships. My venues want me to do my events, and it's a mutual kind of partnership. So
right.
It's not in their interest to just send me an email the night before. It's likely that I haven't done something, so that's never been a worry for me that a venue would kind of pull the plug last minute, if I'm honest. I always build
up relationships. Yeah, good. That's good. Okay, I've got a caller on the line. I'm just going to see who's on the line now. 773, have you got a question for my guest, Jen? Are you there?
Press 1. 773-577, your mic is open. If you have a question or comment, not, we'll come back to you later on. Just feel free to press 1. And let us know you've got something to say. I'm going to see if I can pull up the visual image of the Black Culture Market here on the screen for those who are watching us. And if you're listening online and you want to join this conversation, you can give us a call, 515-605-9325, and press 1 so we know you have something to say. And if you're watching us on Facebook or YouTube, feel free to write in your comments, and we'll pull them up on screen and share them with our listening and viewing audience. So now let me see if I can share this screen with my viewers here so that they, let's see. All right, there. Okay, here we go. All right, so Jen, I've got the Black Culture Market up, as you can see, and we're talking to Jen, who is you're the founder of the Black, okay, she's the founder of the Black Culture Market in Brixton, South London. So for those of you all in the States who didn't know, yes, there is a Black cultural community in London, in the UK. And
there's a few Black cultural communities. The biggest ones are in London.
Now, I have a question. Can you tell us, in terms of Black History Month, I know how it got started here in America in February, which is the coldest month in the year, but how did Black History Month get started in the UK in October? What was the history of that month being selected to celebrate Black culture and Black history? So, Jen, do you know that?
I honestly don't know.
I know here, Carter G. Woodson, who was an educator, he came up with Negro History Week. It was like the second week in February. And then sometime, I think, in the 70s, it got expanded to Black History Month. And so we've been celebrating.
Well, in Britain, I know one of the reasons why it's in October is that the person, I'm really sorry, I can't remember his name, it was something Sebo, I believe, who originally came up with British Black History Month, said he didn't want to have it in February because people talked to him about what it was like having it in February, right? As you just said, it's the coldest month of the year. So that's one of the reasons. But there's other reasons as well that I don't remember right now, that it's in October. But when it was first set up, it was to celebrate the achievements and contributions of people of African heritage in Britain. And it got taken over by lots of different people who wanted to co-opt Black History Month. So, you know, it became a thing about Asians, from people from South Asia. It became about Chinese people. It became about Greek Cypriots. It became about Irish people. And, I mean, personally, I have a problem with that. Other people say it's to do with inclusion. So it depends where you stand on this. But it was originally started out to celebrate the contributions of people of African heritage in Britain. And the person that set it up never intended it to be the Black History Month. He always intended it to be a Black History Month because, you know, many of us believe and are aware that every month is Black History Month.
Right.
So October was meant to be the Black History Month for the official Black History Month, for like for statutory organizations, for libraries, for schools, for colleges, and so forth. But people have Black History events all year round, and that's as it should be.
Yes.
That's as it should be. Every month is Black History Month.
Well, what, you know, one of the things that I see that tends to happen whenever Black people decide that they want to correct a historical exclusion. And so, well, we're going to focus on our culture, our history, and our achievements.
Mm.
It tends to get co-opted by people that want to minimize who we are by saying, oh, well, let's think about all minorities or, you know, all ethnic groups. And I have a problem with that in the sense of, you know, everybody, it's okay. I don't mind if everybody has their own. I don't mind if we have a you know, an Irish celebration. We got St. Patrick's Day here to celebrate. I don't care if we celebrate the Polish people on their day. I don't care if we celebrate the Asian people on their
Chinese
day.
Chinese people. I feel the same. I'm very happy we have Chinese New Year. That's celebrating Chinese culture, and that's a very positive thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's okay if everybody has their own, and we can all appreciate each one's diversity. But don't just
measure. I agree.
Oh, you know, all you minorities, just lump you all together and, you know, anybody No, that's disrespectful.
I completely agree. Do you have any thoughts about that, Jen?
Yeah, and to be honest, even me doing the Black Culture Market, I think that some people, I don't know, they raise eyebrows at it sometimes, and I think it's also like worked in spaces where we did a Latino market, and I have no problem with that, celebrating their culture. Sometimes when we celebrate things that are culture, people kind of get offended by it and then want to include everybody that is of a certain color.
Have you ever had people try to, say, participate, you know, they be there from somewhere else, and then but I got my German chocolate cake and my food, and I think my sauerkraut burgers or whatever, and I should be able to sell at your event. You know, how do you handle it? How do you handle it when they do that and you have to say, well, no, it's about a certain culture? And they holler discrimination.
Yeah.
How do you deal with it?
Especially with it becoming more and more popular. A lot of people do want to come and sell, but I kind of just have to kind of stick to the reason I started it. And it's in the form. Like, I do ask the question, are you of African or Black African or Caribbean descent? And the answer truthfully. And that's kind of it, really.
So how do you handle the charge? Well, this is discrimination. What about if we did it and we said white only? You know, you all would be protesting. How do you handle
that?
Does that
piss you off? Because it seriously pisses me off when that happens.
You know that happens.
Yeah, I haven't had that kind of conversation. And to be honest, actually, in terms of the public, it is open to everybody. I want everybody to come. And
sure.
I do feel we've achieved that, but yeah, I guess this was started because Black representation or African and Caribbean culture wasn't being represented in mainstream shops and outlets. So if it was, there would be a need for me to maybe do this.
Right.
So
exactly. But I don't see why we have to keep explaining that. To me, it's obvious. Right?
Yeah, but unfortunately, it isn't that way. So I've had to create something to kind of address that.
Right. Yeah. So now here,
I was in this teacher training course once many years ago, and someone, I was talking about some of the work I used to do because I used to teach courses for Black people, and some of the students, some of the white students, really got offended. They were really angry, and they were saying, "Well, how would it be if we had courses for white people?" And it was actually a white guy who was, he had not a PC bone in his body as far as I was concerned. And he was 60, which to me in those days was ancient, not like now. But he actually was the one who said, it's obvious in a predominantly white country, having a course for Black people is not the same as having a course for white people. It's obvious. It's obvious. And I'm so grateful to him because I don't actually tend to explain racism to white people because I don't see the point, really. And to me, it's a game. If you want me to explain racism to you, then pay me to explain racism to you, and maybe I will choose to do that. But anyway, he did it for me, and I was so grateful to him for saying that because it is obvious. It's obvious, isn't it? Why do we have to keep explaining it?
Right. I mean, when we get to the point where we don't have to do these things separately, then there actually will be inclusion in the general culture. But right now, there isn't.
Mm.
So we are creating what is necessary to equalize, especially the economy, because those people who are selling their creative works, you know, whether it's clothing or food or jewelry or accessories, whatever it is, they deserve a marketplace. And if they're not shelved in the general stores, then we'll create a marketplace. That's what we do. And
yeah, that's right. That's what every other culture does as well.
Absolutely.
That's the same thing every other culture does. Now, I've got someone with their hand up from 773. I'm just going to bring you into the conversation.
Take a break after you get your comments.
Hi.
All
good
right.
Afternoon. Welcome to the show.
This is Deborah. Thank you for having me.
Hi, Deborah. How are you doing?
Yeah.
I'm just fantastic.
One of my sisters, sisters of the microphone.
Yes. Move around with Deborah, and I
Wonderful.
Am excited to hear what you're bringing to the forefront, Jen. It is a breath of fresh air to visualize what will happen there in October. Celebrating African and Caribbean culture and commerce is not necessarily about history, although this will be history, but it is to bring awareness to even those who are of African and Caribbean descent that they can do this too. They can bring their wares and their ideas and their thoughts to Floricion, to come to the marketplace, to be a part of commerce for this world. And, of course, we know things are going into outer space now. So we're not even limited to this world, this country, this world. We are now in outer space. So I applaud you. Thank you so very much. I certainly will share this information. Again, even though you are in another part of the world than I am, I know that there's folks that will resonate what you are doing and continue your mission. And no explanation, it says it for itself. You know, you don't have to be of African descent or Caribbean descent to enjoy the works that this idea puts out to the world. So bring it on. Continue to bring
me thank you
aware.
For your comments, Deborah. I really appreciate that. And I love your enthusiasm. It's brilliant. But as I was saying at the beginning or earlier in the program, we've had lots of initiatives that supported and celebrated Black-owned businesses. And they've been shut down, and they've had their venues taken away from them. There was sort of an epidemic of this before the pandemic happened. The place is getting shut down. I've heard of several places in London, like I was talking about Black History Studies, I talked about the Nub, who actually own their own premises. I talked about Open the Gate. I'm aware of others as well, and also other places outside of London as well. So, you know, it's been going on for quite a long time, but
we have to
there are forces
pushing.
Out there who want to tear it down.
They keep pushing.
Yeah,
Donna, we got to
They keep pushing.
Absolutely.
They can't
shut
everything down.
Yes. We got to take another break, but when we come back, I want to talk about, you know, is possibly the reason for this, you know, they're trying to say, well, we don't need this now, we're equal now, because sometimes that's what they
right.
do. They we don't need to be separate, or you people, you know, you already, you have overcome, you know, you're equal now, so you don't need to have your own separate thing. And that's sometimes the excuse they use for that. But we'll talk about that when we come back. And then stay close. We're coming right back to take a look at the Black Cultural Market that is celebrating African and Caribbean culture and commerce there in Brixton.
Brixton, in Brixton, South London.
South London. We got another hand up. We'll take another call. We'll be right back. After this quick break, we want you to stick and stay. Don't stray away. We'll be back in a moment, so stay with us.
What if you could live to be 120 years old and remain active, healthy, alert, and vibrant? Our bodies are made up of cells that are constantly rejuvenating. So if we take proper care of ourselves, we can literally defy aging. Join us every Tuesday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time to learn about self, cell care from Susan Essentials on the Female Solution Blog Talk Radio Show. Learn how to help your body and your cells feel rejuvenated each day through proper nutrition, sleep, frequency medicine, and many unconventional methods of self-care. I'm Jody Susan. Join me and my amazing guests by calling in at 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak. We'll help you achieve a breakthrough in your health today.
Oh man, God sent the monthly sun bill today. This sunlight is really expensive, especially during this season. I'll probably have to work overtime to pay it.
Well, you better pay it on time. We don't want the sun to go out and we're sitting up here all day in the dark.
Wouldn't it be terrible if God charged us for sunlight? Well, thank God, the light and heat from the sun is free. So why are we paying such high bills for the energy we use in our homes? Because we don't know how to use solar energy, the free energy from the sun. You can convert your regular home to a solar energy home and save tremendously on your electric bill. Take a look at your electric bill. Wouldn't you like to reduce or possibly even eliminate that cost altogether? Let one of our solar consultants show you how. Call today, 312-849-3456, and schedule a free consultation. That's 312-849-3456.
Is Monday morning a struggle to get out of bed, into the swing of things? Well, don't worry, you are not alone. Join us for thought-provoking, stimulating, and mindful conversations on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks for your Monday morning mindfulness session on Blog Talk Radio, The Female Solution, Mondays, 7:30 until 9 a.m. Be sure and send your ideas, thoughts, comments, and suggestions. Also, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, visit ZeldaSpeaks.com and send us your info. We'd love to have you. Experience mindfulness moments with the mindfulness/stress relief coach, Zelda Speaks. And thanks for sharing the mindfulness moment tip of the day. Stay on purpose, stay empowered, and stay tuned to your next session of Mindfulness on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks. Make it a mindful day. And thanks for listening.
All right, we are back.
So we're back. Well, let's see who's on the line. We've got someone from area code 314. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hello, Naima. How you doing? And the other person.
Jenna, yes, that's me. Hi, it's my show. Hi, welcome to the show.
Our first Saturday of the month host, Jenna, joining us live from London, talking about the Black culture market, and our guest is Jen. Jen, who is the
originator
of the Black culture market there in Brixton, South London. So we got Black History Month coming up in October in the UK, which a lot of us in the States didn't know they had a Black History Month. So there you go. I've learned something new. Well, you're a world traveler.
Well,
know that?
Yeah, you know, you talk about the Caribbean and the Caribbean celebrations, especially in Jamaica. You know, they got a large population of Germans. They call them Jamaicans in Jamaica.
Jamaican, didn't know that.
And that's up to that country. Nigeria, they just say that only Nigerian females will be used as models in their countries. So they don't allow no Black American females nor any German or French females to advertise, you know, in those roles in their country. I mean, it's just the way they want. Here in Missouri, here in not Missouri, but in the States, you got, like in Georgia, you got all-white proms and all-Black proms in private venues. Of course, you can't do that in a public space. And, of course, you got the Nigerian, in the United States, they have their Nigerian American beauty contest. They don't allow Black Americans to enroll. Uganda does the same thing, Kenya, Cameroon. So those people doing what they want to do.
But I saw something recently on TV where someone decided to have a prom. I'm not sure exactly where it was, but it was somewhere in the South. They said, look, we want to have a prom for all of the students, not a Black prom and a white prom. And they did it.
Oh,
they did.
Yeah,
it.
They do that
people
too.
Came, people had a nice
yeah.
time.
You got those on the left or those on the right. You had a guy, you had a city here in Normandy, Missouri, right outside of St. Louis, around the University of Missouri. That mayor, he was a mayor pro tem. His name was Hunt, Maurice Hunt. And he made a statement that when he's elected, he's going to fire all the white workers for that city of Normandy. So that's racism. But I'm just want to let people know that Blacks do it also, but nobody never talks about that. So in London there, if you got a community that it's nothing, I don't see anything wrong with it. I don't think it should be done like Target is doing, having a Black section, a Black owned and produced product section in their stores trying to get Blacks to come and just buy there. I think you should put your products throughout the store. But who am I?
So Pianki, before you, earlier I was telling Jana about the Ghana Fest that we have every year. And then we also have, African Fest, which is this weekend, and all the various African and African-American vendors participate in that. But then with the Ghana Fest, mm-hmm. my understanding is only those of Ghanaian descent are participating in terms of selling things because they want to highlight Ghanaian culture. So I'm sure the question comes up when people want to sell things at a marketplace. Well, how come I can't sell? And, you know, there's discrimination. And I don't know. I mean,
well, that depends on the people that's running. Because they have Ghana festivals. Yeah, they have Ghana festivals here in St. Louis. I used to sit in on the Ghana Association here in St. Louis, but I couldn't vote because I wasn't Ghanaian. I'm Black, but I couldn't vote. So if that's how they want it to be, that's how they want it to be.
So now
it's also people who organize it, how they want to organize it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
they have it specific to their ethnicity.
So now, Jana.
I'm not in favor of that. The community deciding what they need and deciding how to meet that need. I'm all in favor of that. And I also think we need to be doing a bit more working together, really, We need to be having a bit more unity. Why do we have a Nigerian fest and a Ghana fest? Why not just have an African fest? Anyway, that's me. I'm not part of those.
No, they don't
communities.
Want us. They don't
I'm not
want
trying to
like
speak to them. I'm just saying this is, you know, something that's in my mind.
Yeah, you talk about space. There won't be no civil rights on Mars nor a U.S. Constitution. So the people there are running like they want to. Think
well,
about
see,
it.
Here's the thing, and I want you all to maybe give me your thoughts on this. It seems like whenever we get to a point where your people are comfortable being separate because they feel like it means independence, just like the Black culture mark is like, okay, it's Black culture, which means, you know, African, Caribbean, that's we define, we want to do this. But then somebody comes along and says, well, you don't really need that now because we're gonna include you in our thing that we've been excluding you in. We're going to include you in our, you know, marketplace, so you don't really need that Black cultural thing. And then ultimately, eventually, we see these things disappear. Just like, say,
that's it. That's it. Yeah.
Black America pageant, right?
Because people don't support them.
Yeah. I mean,
look at
your
African Senate. Look at your African Senate schools. They went by the wayside, too, because Black Americans wouldn't support them. They didn't want their kids going to those type of schools.
But see, that's the thing. Once those who had been discriminating and excluding decide to include, sometimes the intention is just to get our finances, you know, because they realize once we separate, then our money separates. So we're
yeah, and then also to shut it down. I don't know. Have you got any thoughts about this, Jen?
Yeah, but here's the thing.
Let me interrupt you and just ask Jen what are your thoughts about this?
I think, but see, like I say, I invite buyers, so I do want buyers of mainstream stores to stock the traders and the businesses. The higher goal is, okay, so at what point can a Black business own a department store themselves rather than being included in someone else's store? It's when our own department store and then include other cultures in that rather than the reverse.
I don't think
that it stops there.
Yeah.
Right. Excellent. So you got big plans, which sounds very positive. But I remember a few years ago, I saw this film. It was actually screened by Black History Studies, and it was called More Than a Month. And this young guy down in Atlanta, which is sometimes referred to as Chocolate City, decided we shouldn't have Black History Month anymore because Black history should be included in the curriculum every month. And he had this petition or something going on. He had this whole big protest saying, put a stop to Black History Month because Black History Month should just be included as part of the Black history should just be included as part of the curriculum. And he found out very quickly that when there was no Black History Month, no Black history was taught, right? The only time it was taught in the schools was during Black History Month, which, as we know, is February in the United States.
Well, Black history, what the things that Black done as Americans, Blacks in America are United States citizens. They're not African, they're United States citizens. And they're part of the United States. That's where their history
should be. Oh, yeah, but we can be both.
Like
Italian Americans are U.S. citizens, and Irish Americans are U.S. citizens, and Mexican Americans are U.S. citizens. So they still have their cultural identity as U.S.
Yeah,
citizens.
Yeah, they do. There's no way in the world you can, with the diversity in a public school, you cannot teach history like that. You never would get no place. It's just too many. You know, I know classrooms that have Bosnians in it, have Somalians in it, have Black Americans in it, have whites in it. There's no way in the world. So it's all American history. That's why those people immigrate to the United States in order to make it better, not take from it. If I go to Ghana and live, I'm going there to make it better, not to take from it.
But
you
what
know
happens
what
with
think?
Our history as Black people is that we are lied to. We are taught distortions. And not just us, everybody. Everybody in the whole
Black
country.
Blacks
are
lied to by Blacks, too.
It's lies about Black history. And our history is very, very distorted. And that's why I think we need to take ownership of teaching our own history.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to tell you something. Black history is distorted by Blacks themselves, too.
Hello? Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
Hello? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Or is that Deborah?
Oh, great. Jen, thank you. Because what I think what Jen is trying to bring is not Deborah. Separatism. It's awareness of the conference that we need to enhance for the people.
Yes.
It's not for black, white, indifferent. It's about this culture's commerce and what they bring as far as the arts, artistically, share with folks. You know, a lot of people have fear, and it's becoming a melting pot when you kind of merge and you want to separate.
Mm-hmm,
no,
mm-hmm.
You bring awareness and in heightened. And I think it's all in how a person personally perceives what the intent is, how they come out. So, Jen, I applaud you and what you are trying to promote here. And I certainly know that it will be a success, even if they happen to put you out.
we don't have to.
Well, hopefully they won't put you out. But, you know,
right.
Those cultures, you know, just like I think we was talking earlier, you got black historical black characters should be played by today's black America. That's what Nigeria just said. I don't think that somebody, a black, I don't think that a British person that was born, a U.S. British citizen should be playing a black character, historical character in the United States. No.
Okay,
well,
so
no,
Nelson Mandela,
about.
We had, I think it was Nelson Mandela was played by, didn't Sidney Poitier do a Nelson Mandela?
Yeah, I know Idris Elba played Nelson Mandela at one point.
Yeah. So it's been a lot of people that are not South Africans that played Nelson Mandela. So,
they should have.
Well, I mean, if you do the accent, you get the part.
I think that a part of acting is playing different cultures and roles, and I don't agree with the argument that black British actors can't play American characters and vice versa. I really don't believe
They've done so very well.
It may be crazy because you're from that country, but I'm here from the United States, natural born, and I think that black Americans should play back characters because we have been kept out of those industries for so long. So when the opportunity should rise, then let it be.
Well, Kianki, Jen was saying, what was he saying? Jen,
and that's
about
the same thing that Asians are saying too, Naima. Did you know that? Asians are saying the same thing.
Let's try and hear what Jen has to say. Jen, what's your response?
Right.
Especially in the field of acting. I think that's the whole point of being an actor, is that you adapt to different cultures and you take on that.
Well, it is.
Portray it as an
I won't go to a movie. I won't go to a movie that has somebody other than a black American playing a black character. You know, if you play Willie Mays, that's a black. He was black. Hank Aaron, he was black. Michael Jordan, he's black. I'm not going to a movie that's got a British black person playing Michael Jordan. Hell no. I'm not spending my money. Anyway, I'll see you, Naima. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
This is what I was talking about earlier about unity in the community, because as far as I'm concerned, we're all Africans, right? There's a black British actor, I'm sorry, I don't remember his name right now, but he played Martin Luther King.
Right. I remember his name.
And he did an excellent job. And a lot of black actors in the States weren't happy about it. You know, Samuel L. Jackson wasn't happy about it. First of all, Samuel L. Jackson has got to be the hardest working guy in Hollywood because he's in, like, pretty much every single movie, you know, and he does a great job of it. But I just think we're all Africans. Let's face it. All these borders, all these nationalities, they don't reflect who we really are. We're all Africans.
I think, like Jen said, it comes to who has the best talent, because if you are an actor, learn how to imitate different accents. So you might not be from South Africa, but you might have studied the South African voice inflections and the language and the mannerisms. So you could do a good job, just like somebody could study the American accent and, you know, the Southern accent that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. had. And they can, and like Jen is saying, they want somebody who can kind of physically look like the person as well. You know, they want you to have the physical aura of that person. And if you can do the voice imitation, doesn't matter where you're from, you have the skills to do it, because that's what acting is. And I think
it's about the skill, isn't it? It's about the skill. You know the number of people who were in The Wire who I didn't know were British because they had American accents, right? Idris Elba being one of them. But there's also Dominic West. And the first time I heard Dominic West speaking in his own accent, I was just staring at the screen with my mouth open because I had no idea that he wasn't American until that moment. But, you know, he's a good actor, and he was able to do it. If you're a good actor, you should be able to play different roles from different cultures, different backgrounds.
Yes. So, you know, there's a time and a place for, I guess, I don't know if you call it exclusion or preference.
Mm-hmm.
Like this, where you're highlighting a specific culture. It's a bad thing. Just like if you want Chinese food, you go to Chinatown here. And
Thank you.
Area. There's Greek town. If you want Greek food, Greek clothing, I mean, you go to where it's being, that culture is being highlighted. I don't think there's a problem with that. I don't think it would be right for an African-American to go to Greek town and say, well, look, you all are discriminating. I want my stuff here, because this is not about you. It's about our culture. I think that's different than if you have something that's supposed to be for the general public, but then, you know, some kind of way you manage to exclude me. But and now, Jen, you did mention something which I'd like to talk about if we can, Jana. Sometimes black businesses don't have their stuff together in terms of, you know, the organization.
Very true. Very true.
And sometimes
every time
it's not
I get into a conversation with this about this subject, right, why don't we support our black-owned businesses, it always comes up. Customer care is always an issue. But I remember one time I was doing a show and we were talking about this, and we were saying, if you go to a white-owned shop and you don't get good customer care, you don't say, I'm never going to another white-owned shop again, right? You say, I'm not going to that shop again. But if it's a black shop, you're like, oh, black businesses, we know what they're like. I'm not shopping there again. We generalize.
That's true. So Jen, what should we do when, you know, if there is an issue with a specific business, rather than generalize and say, oh, you know, all these Caribbean people are rude, or, you know, all of these Nigerian people are, you know, crooked. I mean, rather than doing that, because we don't like it done to us, how should a person respond if they're dissatisfied with a product or a service?
I think talk to the business privately and see how they respond to you. Unfortunately, you don't always get the kind of welcome when you try and give feedback, but I think that's the first step. Try and support them. Don't just tell them what they're not doing, but maybe give them some feedback. Getting there and starting a business is huge. So they've done something, and then just support them with, okay, this could have been done better. Is it possible you could do this? But try and do it privately, first of all. Don't just walk away and tell your friends, oh, they didn't do this, they didn't do that, because that can be quite damaging. And then go from there.
So do you think that that's what happens? Do you think that people actually do give their feedback to black-owned businesses in a positive way?
Sorry?
Do you think that people, like say someone goes to a black-owned business and they're not happy with the customer care, do you think that they give that kind of feedback, that kind of constructive feedback? Do you think that's what happens?
I mean, I do. I do it all the time. Okay. And like my events, people always tell me, I send out a feedback form, so I actually ask for
right.
it. So I get feedback. Not everything you can. Obviously, some people just want you to tell you how to run your business, and it's not about customer care as such, but you've always got to be open if you're in a service industry to listen to your customers.
But give us an example of when you would give positive feedback, you know, criticism, but in a positive, constructive way.
Where I would do it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, or when you have done it, you know, when somebody maybe...
What was that? What was that?
It could be, for example, like if I've ordered something and there's been an issue with delivery, it's just the way things go wrong, but maybe the way they've handled it and not making it, owning the problem rather than
oh, you need to do this, or you should have done this. Trying to go, oh, because problems happen, but it's how you kind of
take responsibility.
And solve it.
Yeah,
because problems are a part of life, right? Problems are a part of life, but it's how we deal with them.
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the pet peeves that I have, being treated like, oh, you're just complaining, oh, you're just being difficult, you know, if something isn't done right or something's missing out of an order, you know, if you get the impression people are just too lazy to, you feel like they're just too lazy to try to address your issue and just, you know, make it be, oh, that's all right. You know, don't complain about it. Yeah. So
here,
people should make sure that the customer is satisfied. I think that's a part of training your employees, because they have to realize if we lose a customer, that means we lose money. That means you lose money on your paycheck, because I'm paying you out of what they pay me. So if you drive them out the door by not doing a good job, then eventually I might let you go, because I won't be making enough money to pay you. So they need employees need to see the the connection.
The consequences.
Yes. But
I think if employees are treated well, then they're more likely to treat the customers well.
It doesn't have that understanding. It trickles down to the employees.
Right.
So it does normally come from the business owner first and foremost to set the standards.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Well, let's take one last break, Jana. And if you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325, and press 1 to let us know you have something to say. We're talking to Jen, who is the founder of the Black Culture Market there in Brixton, South London. And October is Black History Month there in the UK. So this gives us a good kickoff in celebrating the economics of Black culture with a Black Culture Market. And when we come back, Jana, one thing that I wanted to find out about was, you know, Jen, how did you find these people? You know, how do you discover where they are, especially if their products aren't on the shelves in the general marketplace? So we'll talk about that when we get back. And, of course, if you are listening online, we want you to add your 2 cents. Call us 515-605-9325 and press 1 so that we know you have something to say. We'll be right back after this quick break. So stay with us.
Hi, this is John Alexander.
And I'm Lizzie. Meet people like you who are making a positive difference in the world. Watch us every day on The Media Connection at www.youtube.com/TheMediaConnectionTV.
YouTube it. We'll see you soon.
There are people who choose to make a positive difference in the world. Our job is to bring you their stories to motivate you to do the same. Join us each week, host John Alexander and Naima Latif, as we bring you the educators, entertainers, elected officials, religious leaders, and community activists whose works are transforming this world. Find out how you can make a difference too. Be inspired. Watch The Media Connection. The Female Solution Global Radio TV Show invites you to an invigorating conversation with our team of hosts Mondays and Fridays, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Time. Start your week with Monday Morning Mindfulness with Zelda Speaks. Tuesdays, Self-Care with Jody Toussaint. Wednesdays, Repairing Broken Families with Naima Latif and co-host Kareem Hamid. Thursdays, Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. And Fridays, Health and Well-Being with Viata. Saturdays, tune in 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Time. First Saturday, Success Strategies with Donna. Second Saturday, Wendy Williams Esquire on Relationships. Third Saturday, Move Around with Deborah. And fourth Saturday, Wisdom with Mama D. Join us Sundays, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time for Soul Purpose Healing with Viata. Call in and comment, 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to the host and be a part of the solution.
Crime in Chicago continues to increase. Communities and politicians must come together to make a change. No one person can solve these problems by themselves, but I believe together we can make progress. Let's provide job training, economic growth, and invest into our 77 community. Let's rebuild and restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of Chicago. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for mayor.
Our kids are the future and should not be left behind. One person should not decide what is the best for our 77 communities. Politicians must work together for our kids' best interests. They deserve a safe education with resources that meet every student need. Let's rebuild and restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of Chicago. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for mayor.
Do you worry about finances, family, health, job, relationships? Are you in pain? Do you feel stuck? If you answered yes to any of these questions, help is available. Don't worry, you're not alone. It's part of the human process. You only feel this way because you haven't mastered the voices in your head. No hype, just down-to-earth, solid, workable tools and techniques that you can practice daily. It's really food for the soul. Whether you want to learn how not to worry about anything, reverse type 2 diabetes, publish a book, promote your product or service, or just make extra money. To take advantage of the deal of the day, go to ZeldaSpeaks.com or call 312-409-6619. Mention promo code The Female Solution and get free shipping. That's ZeldaSpeaks.com or 312-409-6619. Stop worrying today. Visit ZeldaSpeaks.com.
This is Jana with Success Strategies. I'm talking to my guest today, Jen, from the Black Culture Market in South London in Brixton. Unfortunately, we did have a caller on the line, but I think they got tired of waiting. I'm sorry that happened. But I've got a question for you, Jen, which is to do with the current economic crisis, because I mean, we're basically having an economic disaster at the moment in Britain. And I'm wondering, how does that affect Black consumers? And also, how does it affect Black businesses?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I feel like, you know, there's a lot of kind of studies and research being done generally, especially in the UK, but there's not at the moment enough data on Black businesses and how it's affecting the Black consumer. I would say, thankfully, so far, in terms of the Black culture events, we've just had one in August, which was the Twinning of Harlem, because Brixton is twinned with Harlem. And that was one of the biggest ones yet in terms of sales, traders, and the public attending. So I know that, you know, other market events have been hit by the cost of living crisis that we're having in the UK. So far, we've managed to kind of get stronger. I think I'm quite conscious of, you know, there's a lot of media going around. And obviously prices are rising, but not to get caught up in the kind of scaremongering and scare tactics media as well.
It's very easy to get caught up in it, I think, because it is very scary what's happening. Do you not agree?
Sorry?
I said, it is unfortunate. It's very easy to get caught up in it because it is very scary. What's happening is very scary.
I do agree, but I'm someone who's not really, you know, I'm not looking at the news and the media every day because the media's job sometimes is to provide bad news. And if it's not, you know, one crisis, it's the next. And my job is to just continue on what I'm doing, supporting Black businesses the best way I can.
Right.
And like I said, so far, we've managed to come through it. We couldn't operate during the coronavirus pandemic because of the lockdowns, but actually that gave myself and the businesses time to improve what we were doing. The quality and the amount of businesses that now apply has gone up by tenfold. While there's any crisis, there's always going to be opportunities as well. So
okay.
I've looked at the opportunities and served the businesses that I support.
So I've got a question. You know, a lot of businesses really took advantage of the online services or even creating a visual platform online when they had to kind of pull back because of the pandemic. And there were some organized business groups that would do like an online shopping mall kind of a thing. Were you able to translate the in-person market to an online marketplace, and did people get the same or at least a comparable amount of shoppers ordering products online? Were the businesses set up to take orders online? Because that was another thing. People had to create a website and the way to order and deliver and all that. So what was your experience with that?
That was an option. It's something I looked into. I decided not to. Various reasons. I actually took that time to, like I said, build a platform, build a social media. When you're working in a business, there is a danger of every day you're working in it but not on it, and actually just gave me time to work on it and strategize and come back 10 times better and, you know, really hone down on what I'm doing and the next few years ahead. I did look into it, but I also feel it was a black culture market. It is about the in-person experience. It's about the music. It's about the customer feedback. It's about talking to everybody. It's coming together. So it's not to say I wouldn't ever do it, but I just felt like, okay, I'm not just going to react just for the sake of it. I need to stay true to, you know, the coming together, and I'm just going to take this time to work on the business.
Excellent. I think that's excellent. So you took the opportunity to do some strategizing. Is that right?
Yeah.
So what were some of the changes you made during that time that you...
So I got a new venue. So prior to the pandemic, I had a smaller venue, and I took time to kind of look at venues, speak to them, visit them, see what's going to be best. So I launched with the new venue. I launched with a new website, social media, new forms, new agreements. Really, you know, made the process a lot smoother for the traders and the public.
So how do you advertise to find them? You say, you know, are you a vendor or a person of African descent? Or, I mean, how do you attract those who are participating in a way that screens out the ones that you don't want to be a part of it, but doesn't sound in a way that would be offensive? How do you draw the people to the black culture market?
I mean, so initially when I first started, you know, I didn't have anyone. And so I just would speak to like friends and anyone who's starting a business. And then once I kind of put out a few kind of advertisements, maybe flyers or posters, people just started emailing me. And then from there, now I obviously have a better social media campaign and strategy. So people, I don't have to go out as such. I still do look around. I can be on Instagram and things like that. But I think just the branding, word black culture market, kind of makes it quite fairly clear. And like I say before, my number of questions, for example, the black culture market is about product businesses. So I make it clear that it's a product, it's not services. Mm. And like I say, I ask, are you of black African or Caribbean descent? And even you can see on the website there, it supports, you know, entrepreneurs and new black businesses. So I kind of make it really clear what we're doing.
Mm. Now, what is the online presence for any of the businesses? Are many of them set up to sell products and services online?
A mixture of them. Most of them are, and that's becoming more and more important. Like buyers want, my aim is a buyer will maybe come and discover you there, but I want them to become a repeat customer of yours. So I don't want them to just
be able to access you four times a year when we have an event, you need to be set up online to continue that relationship. So most of them are. The others are, I might have to still work with to get a website.
So would you be interested in perhaps partnering with someone who is kind of promoting Black businesses globally online?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. But I think the next day that I've been contacted by organizations in different countries, but the next step is to kind of go global and help the businesses reach customers internationally.
Yeah, I mean, there's a sister here. She's been on the show before. She runs an organization called the Black Mall, and, you know, and it's online shopping. And the whole idea is to promote the culture, you know, African-American culture, and probably that includes, I know she's also got some Jamaicans, some Caribbeans, and that sort of thing. And a lot of our shopping habits changed during the pandemic, where people got used to being able to shop from home, and some of them never wanted to come back out afterwards. You know, they got used to getting their food delivered. I mean, do you have food products that people sell? That you know?
Yes, we have food products, and then we also have, like, a hot food trader on the day, because, like I said, we have a DJ, so it is about the whole experience. But, yeah, we do have, like, kind of cold or packaged food products as well.
That sounds great. Sounds great.
It really does. I mean, I don't know why I have not heard about it until now. But obviously I've been missing out because it sounds great.
Yeah.
Well, the next one's only in, 1st and 2nd of October, so 4 weeks away.
So you're doing it four times a year. Had you considered expanding? Oh, you said your vision is to have an actual store that is a regular fixture.
I'm not sure if that's specifically part of my vision, but I feel like that is that should be a part of vision for us as Black African or Caribbean people, not just to be included in someone else's store, but having our own department stores.
Well, I think that was a lot of the complaint that happened after here in America, where they had this great big protests about not being included on the Black products, not being included on the general supermarket shelves. And so then they started including the products, and then you started to see less Black-owned stores. And so the thought was, okay, well, yeah, there was discrimination, but at least we were patronizing our own stores, and now our products are in these big store chains, but we don't have any store that we own. So, you know, you sacrifice one for another. And like you're saying, you know, what about if we own the store and then we can put our own products in, and then if we want to include other people, we can do that too. But we make the decision on whose products get on the shelves.
One of the, like, key values for that culture market is about ownership. So I think that would be the ultimate goal. But obviously there's steps.
That's so important. That is so important.
Great for the department store. So everything takes steps.
Well, I got another question, Jonathan. I don't know if you all have this problem here, but we've had a whole lot of major stores close after the pandemic, and that meant a lot of people lost jobs. Now,
before the pandemic, because there was all these malls closing in the States, and I think that's starting to happen here as well now. You know, the death of the mall, basically.
Yes. And my thought was, is there a way we could cooperatively purchase and own stores, buy that space or whatever the case may be, and then all of these people who've been doing, like, street vending, they can have a regular place where you could, I mean, they can still do the street vending events to market and promote on the special times of the year, but if people want to buy from them after the event is over, they can go to a physical location and... Well, the question is always, where do you get the capital? I believe we could come up with ways to collectively finance a business and have it, you know, cooperatively owned. I believe that can happen, but then you have to have someone, like, willing to sort of take charge and take the lead and organize it so that it is all, you know, it has all of the necessary business licensing and, you know, and accounting and tax structures so that everybody can see financially where the profits are. I mean, I think it can happen,
yeah.
But somebody has to be willing to go through the process of organizing.
Oh, well, yeah.
Have empty spaces and people who got products, but nobody really has a place to sell. And, you know, I think we could do that. What are your thoughts on that?
I definitely agree. I think the landscape is changing for physical stores, though. Like in the UK, a lot of high streets are empty, units. So people are buying online. And obviously a physical store is a huge overhead and compared to just setting up online, you don't have those rents and business rates. But it's definitely possible. I think it's definitely something to kind of work towards. But I think it's more, at least for me, slower kind of to get there, having a foundation.
Yeah, because one of the things I really enjoy about working with Naima is that she's such a visionary, right? She's such a visionary, but, you know, like a lot of visionaries, she's kind of several years ahead of where the rest of us are. So Naima comes up with these great ideas, and I'm like, yeah, let's do that. But it's a question of getting from where we are now to where we want to be. You get me?
Yes. So what would it take then to get people of the mindset where they believe that you could have a cooperatively owned supermarket where people could buy shares into it, be part owners of it, and then have people who can have their products for sale in this supermarket, and rather than looking for, you know, one big banker or one big millionaire or whatever to finance it, the people could collectively finance it and trust each other enough to know that the management of it is being handled by people who are honest and not going to, you know, run off with the money and close it down and leave like has happened to us. So what would it take to get
that? That's what needs to happen, isn't it? That's what needs to happen. It's a question of how to do it.
Yeah, you'd have to come up with a structure. And I don't know if it would be about a matter of buying shares. Like if you came up with a business plan, this is how much it would cost to buy this space. And, you know, if we divided up into so many shares and sold shares to people who wanted to have ownership in this supermarket that's in their city or whatever the case may be, in their neighborhood, then we could also project what, you know, how much of our spending we would need to do in order for us to break even each month or whatever the case may be, and then, you know, recruit the vendors, like those who participate in the Black Culture Market, recruit the vendors to have their products in the store. And, you know, have a standard and talk about some of the things like customer care, you know, a standard of treatment of people so that people want to shop there because they're going to be treated well, the prices are decent, and having things like we were talking about, buying in bulk so that everybody's benefiting and everybody is able to save money. So I think a plan like that is doable. But like you're saying, Jonna, you know, a lot of times people aren't ready for that because they still haven't gotten past the point of trust. You know, can I trust?
Yeah, it's a question of how do we get from here to there, because, I mean, I think it's a wonderful idea, and I think you're right. It is doable, but it's just kind of, you know, how are we going to do this? How are we going to get from here to there? This is the challenge right now. But it's not really, we need to have our own shops in our own neighborhoods that we own. That's what's needed.
To, you know, get involved. But it takes that first step, obviously, you know, that might take a lot of capital.
Yeah.
Raising funds before everyone gets on board.
Yeah, that's the challenge now. I have a friend who's been trying to open a supermarket in an area of the city that's kind of been a very poor, like Robbins is the name of the community. Deborah, you know where that is. It's, you know, like south of Chicago. And he's been trying to supermarket with that same idea, you know, getting people to buy shares into it. He's got beautiful plans laid out. The architect, beautiful plans of the parking lots, the gardens that they would, you know, be growing their own food on the property. I mean, all kind. I mean, it's a brilliant idea.
Mm-hmm.
But people poor and have not owned anything. It's hard to get them to see a vision like that because that's the reason why they're poor, because they don't have a vision. They don't think they're capable. And so they don't trust somebody who comes with a vision. They don't trust that if they give money to something, it's going to actually happen. So like you're saying, Jen, you know, sometimes you just have to do it. And then the people who don't, who are skeptical, they'll come on board after they see it working.
Sure.
Yeah. They have enough who are willing.
People have been hurt before as well. That's another thing.
Yes.
You know, there's the history that's gone on. Just talking about the history within our own communities, let alone anything else. People have been hurt. People have been burnt. And, you know the old saying, once bitten, twice shy.
Yeah. People have been burnt. They've been get-rich-quick schemes. I mean, of course, you know, I'm sure they probably teach during Black History Month Marcus Garvey and how he had the shipping business.
Mm.
And actually, you know, wanted to have a whole global business with shipping, bringing products from across the water, but then the company that sold them the ships, some of the ships were kind of raggedy. Well, you know, if you don't know anything about ships, you don't really know what you're buying, so he got kind of ripped off there. And then people try to say he was a crook because they invested in the shipping business, and then, you know, the ships couldn't sail, and, you know, so... Like you say, we've been burnt. We've been disappointed.
Yeah, people have been hurt by their own. I mean, same, something similar happened with Malcolm X. People have been burnt by our own people, our own community. And so there's a collective sense of healing, I think, that needs to happen.
Yeah.
You know, I think we can get past this, but there's some healing that needs to happen first.
Yeah, we got to figure out, you know, what mistakes were made. Because a lot of major business ventures were initiated by religious organizations, and they were sort of part of the whole religious movement. But then, you know, if there's some kind of conflict within the religious group, then the business aspect of it falls apart, and then you find out people weren't always honest. So, I mean, I think something that is not religious, but just based on culture, which people have a right to organize around their cultural products, I think that would probably get more trust than something organized around a religion, because people have been burnt by religious groups.
Yeah, but did you know that Garvey, one time he went to, I'm sorry, I haven't got the details in front of me, but I have blogged about this in the past. He went to a country in the Caribbean where people were dirt poor. I mean, dirt poor. He raised something like 20 grand in one weekend.
Yeah.
Because he was able to communicate his vision to a certain extent so that people could actually relate to what he was saying. Everyone could see what he was trying to do at that moment. Because, you know, as African people all over the world, we share some of the same challenges. And these are people who are dirt poor. They managed to raise something like 20 grand in the course of a weekend. It's extraordinary. It's extraordinary what we can do when we really put our minds to it.
Yeah, but you got to have that person who, or people who can inspire people. So now I have the of the Black Cultural Market up on the screen, and says that the objective is to. We exist to help close the wealth gap, create more jobs and opportunities, inspire more ownership. And our next event, taking place over 2 days in the heart of Brixton, offers a diverse quality shopping and cultural experience celebrating producers of the African and Caribbean community. If you're looking for gift cards, unique prints, jewelry, male grooming kits, skincare, clothes, and other original accessories, come on down. This market truly embodies the community spirit as well as supports Black businesses. So I think that's great. I think that's great. Of course, people can go and spend some money. So now, do you all do a big Kwanzaa thing during, like, the holidays here? Do your Kwanzaa events, like, right after New Year's, the way it is in the States?
Well, yeah, we have Kwanzaa events starting right after Christmas.
Okay. So then will there be another Black Market event during that time, Jen?
Yeah, the next one will be the first weekend of December, because that's when most people kind of start their Christmas shopping.
for the holiday season, so first weekend in December.
Okay, good. So then, do you have your venue for that already, or are you?
Yes, I do. So I have a very good relationship with the venue, so yeah, that's all booked in.
Okay, so now for those who are listening, I know we've got about 10 more seconds before we are off there. How do they reach you? Your website, your phone number?
Website is blackculturemarket.co.uk, and also we're really active on Instagram, which is Black Culture Market, so you'll see like daily updates on Instagram.
All right. Sounds great.
Okay, I'm really sorry, but we're going to have to end here. Thank you so much, Ben, for being a guest on our show. Hopefully you'll be able to come back again maybe next year and tell us what you've been up to, what you've been achieving. But it's really, really lovely to know that you've stepped up this market and it's rising.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Yes, thank you so much. And join us tomorrow, you all, for Soul Purpose Healing with Beata, coming on 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, and let's see, I guess it'll be in the middle of the night if you're in London, but hey, if you don't hear it live, you can hear it in the archive. Tune on in for the Female Solution Soul Purpose Healing tomorrow, and then join us back again Monday morning with Monday Morning Mindfulness with Zelda Speaks. You've been listening to Success Strategies with Jana, joining us live from London with the Black Culture Market. Thanks so much, Jen. We appreciate you. We'll see you soon.
And to our global family listening from all around the world,
thank you.
Say thank you. To our family in China,